Happy Monday to y'all. Bob McCallum, John Shannon with you on the program today. Rick Bonus is going to join us, and under normal circumstances, well, he wouldn't even be available to join us.
Listen, these aren't normal circumstances anyway. Are you kidding me?
Well, his team would be in the playoffs, and I think everybody pretty much expected they would be in the playoffs when we got to this game.
The roller coaster that the Dallas Stars were, when you consider they got to the Stanley Cup final in the bubble. And then remember, Bob, they got hit by COVID as the season started. It was, they got their first five or six games delayed. They had to make them up. Everybody said they're going to turn it around. They had a tough time because all those games at hand, when you have games at hand, you know what you have to do in order to take advantage of it. You have to win.
You have to win.
And they had a difficult time doing that. They had injuries. They had, you know, their number one goalie wasn't there all season. Their number one star wasn't there until the very end. It was a tough row to hoe for Bonus and his team this year. And it'll be interesting to see what he says about it.
Well, one of the things I want to ask him is if he felt like there was a target on their back, because what we do know in sports is that when you have a good year, the next season, opposing teams tend to be more aware, get up for those games. And it's not just in hockey, but it certainly is in hockey. And I wonder whether he feels like that was part of the equation, because the Dallas Stars really were, they weren't an upset to get to the Stanley Cup final last year, but they were a bit of a surprise.
Oh, yeah, they were. When you think that everybody had pinpointed Colorado to be the team coming out of the West, and Colorado got run completely with injuries. And really what happened was that Dallas got so much better goaltending than Colorado did. And playoff hockey's so many times is about goaltending. And that's what Rick Bonus's team did.
Well, we'll see whether the coach thinks they suffered from the fact that other teams were more up for them. But I would suggest that that's probably not the case. We will, we'll find that out. The head coach of the Dallas Stars, Rick Bonus, will join us today on the program, and we'll commence after these messages. It's the program for a Monday. Yours truly, Bob McCallum, with John Shannon. You and our guest go back a long ways. Now, mind you, you go back a long way with everybody.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm not gonna say that I remember walking into the press room and seeing Clarence Campbell asleep in the corner, but I remember Clarence Campbell asleep in the corner. I also remember Rick Bonus playing for the Winnipeg Jets. So that's how far back Rick and I go, when I started producing in 1979.
The head coach of the Dallas Stars, Rick Bonus, is with us. Now, Shannon told me something about you, Rick, that I wasn't actually aware of. He says that you have more games behind the bench on an NHL team than anybody in history. I assume you're aware of that, yes?
I am well aware of that. My kids remind me of that constantly. So at some point early next year, I'll coach over 2,500 games. I don't know if that's in October or November, but we're close to 2,500. And God willing, I'll make 2,500 next year. We'll go from there. It's been a long ride.
Do you ever get to the point where you wish they had a stool back there for you to rest on?
Not yet. And when I get there, even if I get close to that, then I know it's time to go. No, we're not close to that yet.
Before we talk about the Stars, did you know near the end of your playing career? Because there's two generations, I hate to say it, two generations that don't know you played in the NHL. But did you know that you were going to be a coach?
The generation that I play with doesn't know I played in the NHL because I wasn't very good. I sat on the bench an awful lot. Yeah, I did. And I know you remember John Ferguson Sr. being the general manager of our team back in Winnipeg then. And I think when I was, I forget when I was 25 or 26, and I know that's young, and I was negotiating my own contracts at that point. Fergie brought it up to me. Would you like to stay in the game and stay in the coaching when you're done? And I said, absolutely. So at that, I had to be 26 or 27. Anyways, we negotiated a contract that had a clause in it that there was X amount of dollars to be paid as a player, but there was also a clause in that contract that said X amount of money to be paid when you coach. So that was the last playing contract I signed. So it did have a clause in it that my salary would change when I got into coaching. So yeah, I and even at that stage, listen, that you know, I played in the Jets, I think it was 80, 81. And I knew my playing days in the NHL were going to wind down pretty quick because if you couldn't play in that team, he weren't going to last very long. So that's when I figured I better start looking at, if I want to stay in the game, then I got to look into coaching. And so it was something I've always wanted to do.
Who was that, Tommy McVie?
Tommy was there. And then we brought in Tommy Watt. We had Bill Sutherland after they fired Tommy. We had Mike Smith come in after they fired Billy. So it was rotating dorm coaches. We weren't a very good team. Certainly wasn't on the coaches.
So I'm trying to put you on the spot. There's a whether it's a myth or a fact, that Tom Watt one day got the Calder Trophy for Dale Hawerchuk and stuck it in his stall to say, hey, you know, are you the guy that we've always had? And are you the rookie of the year, or do you want to coach this team with this trophy? Is that, do you know of that? Is that true?
I don't know of that.
Okay.
I probably wasn't around then. So no, I'm not aware of that. I did hear that too. So.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So I wasn't making it up.
No, you're not making that up. There's something to that.
So you get, you literally step off the ice and step into a role as a coach. And that, you would acknowledge, Rick, is not necessarily that uncommon. You're a hockey player. You spent your whole life playing the game. You get to the National Hockey League. You see maybe the end of the career being somewhere down the road. You want to stay in the game. You want to stay connected to the game. Coaching is an option. We've seen it over and over and over again. But was there anything that happened that led you to believe that you could have the kind of success that you've had in coaching?
No, not really. You know, I've always said, listen, I know I'm not the smartest coach in the world, but I think what even then as a player, being a borderline player, there was a passion for the game. And the passion, I always had the respect of my teammates because of that passion. And when I went into, I was actually a player assistant coach in Sherbrooke when we first went into Sherbrooke in the American League with the Jets. And when I went to Winnipeg in November after they fired Tommy Watt and they hired Barry Long, I think it was around November 22nd, 83. There was players there that I had played with. There were some of the players there that were older than I was because I was only 28. But I think it's the passion for the game and the love of the game that has kept me going. I had the respect, you know, the players, the people around me. So I think more than anything, it's just my love of the game, my passion for the game that comes out.
You'll recall Gary Green took over as a head coach in the National Hockey League. I want to say he was 24 years old, something like that.
Yeah, a little older than that.
26, I think.
Was he 26?
Yeah, I'd say 26 as well.
But he was very young. And Gary and I became friends years ago, back in the 80s. And we chatted about this briefly. I recall the conversation. Did you experience difficulty getting guys to listen to you, respect your word in the early days of coaching? Because, as you said, there were many guys that were older than you.
No, not really. I didn't. You know, I've always coached like I wanted to be coached, right? As a player. I've always wanted, that's what I said. If I'm going to get into coaching, you learn from everyone, the good and the bad from every coach you play for. But I've always, even when I first got into it, if I'm going to coach and I wanted to coach, then I'm going to do it my way. And I'm going to coach the way I wanted to be played or wanted to be coached as a player. And I think when you do that, you're honest with the players. You're upfront with the players. There's no hidden agenda. There's no mind games you're playing with them. I wasn't a big believer in that either because I didn't like it as a player. And I think that helped keep the respect. Now, first of all, as a coach, everything you tell them to do is not going to work out. It's not. And you've got to be honest. Okay, you know what? We tried that. We did it perfectly. It didn't work. Let's try something else. And I think the honesty and forthrightness that I had with them helped. They knew the passion I had. So I never had those issues. Now, again, sometimes, as and this always happens, every coach, you bench a player or you don't play him like he thought, you're the worst coach he ever played for. So you got to move on from those things as well. But again, I've always coached every day of my life that way I wanted to be coached, and to be honest, be upfront, be energetic, and make the, I always hate when I read players, I hated going to the rink. It was a bad atmosphere. I've always hated that. I've always tried to avoid that scenario as well.
So when you think of the way you coach, who was the guy that was behind the bench, maybe not even in the NHL for you, Rick, that you said, hey, this guy made a difference for me, and every once in a while I hear him when I speak?
Well, I'm going to really date myself here, but my first year pro, Orland Kurtenbach was our coach. And yeah, and we were in the Tulsa, the then Central Hockey League, and we won the championship that year. And Kurt was, that's the kind of the guy that I've kind of looked at up there, that he just let you play. And, you know, he gave you a couple little things to improve your game, but more than anything, he let you play your game and let you be you, and didn't try to overcoach. So that had an impact on me. I was 20 years old then. We won a championship, and here's a coach that just said confidence in his players just to go and play your game and work within a team structure, obviously. But Kurt had an influence on me in that way.
He was tougher than anybody, too. So, I mean,
you know what Fergie always told me? He said there's one guy he always worried about fighting back in the day, and it was Kurt, because Kurt had long arms and just stood back there and threw him. So, I always had a lot of respect for Kurt and still do.
I've often wondered what percentage coaches feel they are a teacher and what percentage psychologist. You want to weigh in on that question?
Yeah, that's changed a lot over the years, I'll tell you that. In this generation today, it's more your ability to communicate with them and relate to them. And these guys, they're brought up differently than we were. We were never allowed to ask why, right? These guys want to know. They want to ask why, and why are we doing this? And not to be confrontational in any means, just they want to understand why we're doing this. So your ability to communicate with this generation, the last couple of generations, is absolutely huge. And I've been able to do that. Even with, what I always say, when I got into coaching, I was younger than some of the players. And the reality is now I'm old enough to be some of their grandfathers. Mm-hmm. And I am, right? I'm coaching 20-year-old kids. I'm 66. So you, regardless of that, you still have to be able to relate to them on their path. So I've always been able to do that, and I've always taken great pride in that. And you've got to, right now, your door has to be open. You have to be open to communicate. You have to be able to explain yourself, which is fine. That's what you deal with. So the psychologist part of it, to answer your question, is huge right now. You've got to be able to relate to your players. You've got to be able to understand your players, as well as give them direction to make them and the team and play better.
I think when the three of us first started watching sports, hockey specifically, it was in an era when coaches demanded respect from the players. As you said, you didn't talk back. You didn't ask questions. You were expected to do what you were told. And if you didn't, there were going to be consequences to it. That, for the most part, has changed. Is that for the better? Do you think the game is easier to coach better now that young players are more willing to be vocal and even sometimes argumentative?
There's pros and cons to that as well. But today, we don't want to date ourselves. You always spend a couple of years in the minors and you learn how to play the game the right way. And today, a lot of kids are being force fed into the NHL, and it also goes back to the minor hockey structure. Now, these kids coming in, they've had good coaching. They've been exposed to international competition. They've been exposed to a high level of competition that wasn't there when we were younger. So, again, it's your ability to relate to them, but they just want to know what's going on. They want to know what you're doing with them, why you're doing it with them. And that's just a part of coaching with these kids today. So it's easier, harder. I don't look at it that way. I just look at it. It's reality of what we're dealing with today. And again, the kids today don't have the hockey sense that we did a long time ago. They just don't, because they're being force fed so quickly and they're elite players. The natural hockey sense is slacking in some of them, not all of them, obviously, but so you just help them along those lines.
I know that's an amazing comment. When you think that there's a lot of people, I assume that you don't have to teach too much at this level, but if they don't have that hockey sense, then you have to do some more teaching, don't you?
Yeah, you do more teaching now, I find. And you do
more so than in previous generations.
Yes. Yeah. But again, you were dealing with players that had played pro along, you know, in the minors and learned a different way to play. And now, yeah, it's not that, I guess the hockey sense is not the right way to put it. It's getting them to fit into a team structure. Okay. a little differently than they've been exposed to before, because they've always been the elite player on their teams. Well, now they're coming in, they might not be the elite player. So now you got to kind of work them into a team role, trying to build them and help them grow into that leadership role a few years down the road. Very few players are McDavid to step in and dominate the game like he does, right? You stay out of his way. There's certain players, man, you just stay out of the way and you let them go. You don't coach them, you go play. But there's other players that, because they've been, in the first round pick and they're coming and think that they're going to play 20 minutes and all of a sudden they're playing 14. Well, you've got to explain to them why that is. And this is what you have to do to improve to get you up to that 20 minute level.
Has the money empowered the players?
So, certainly. But one thing, it has it absolutely. They're getting long-term contracts, so they're very secure. But the one thing that drives all of us is that they've always been team players, and they only know how to play within the team. Now it's different systems and everything, but they understand the importance of a team. So they're not, the money empowers them, but they also understand they have to play within a team system, and the team play is important. So they're not coming in thinking they're bigger than the team. They understand that, because ever since they've played hockey, it's a team game, and different roles, yeah, and different minutes, yeah. But they still understand they have to be part of a team. I think that's a natural instinct for all of them.
With Rick Bowness, the head coach of the Dallas Stars, you have coached through an evolution in this sport. In the days when you played and beforehand, when you were growing up watching the game, like John and I, the game was extremely physical and fisticuffs were a big part of the sport. It's not that the NHL isn't physical. It still is, but not to the same degree, I don't think. And
it's a different physical. It's a different physical.
Yeah, and the fighting has, in relative terms, disappeared. Do you like the game better today?
The game is faster, for sure, far more entertaining. The one thing I always hated about the fighting was those premeditated fights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They go to the – I hated that part of the game, and I wanted it abolished, and I'm glad we no longer do that, where two guys tap each other on the shin pads at a face-off and say, okay, I want to keep my job. We're going to fight. I hated that part of our game. I really did. So I'm glad that's gone. Now, it's a physical game, and we all walk a fine line here, because we all love the passion and the energy that players play with. Everyone loves a physical game. Well, if you're asking them to play with energy, with passion, and stay physical, fights are inevitable. They are.
Yeah,
because sure. if you take that part, if you take the passion out of our game and you take the physicality out of our game, I'm not sure we're going to enjoy watching the game as much as we do. Everyone loves a good open ice hit, as long as it's clean and there's no headshots, which I absolutely hate as well. So if you're going to have grown men go out there with high stakes and thousands of people, when we get back to normal world, watching them and get excited about a hit, and you think you can intimidate a player by hitting them, you can't take that part out of our game. Unfortunately, yeah, fights are going to happen every now and then, but I'm glad the fighting is down. And again, I hated those premeditated fights. But again, if we're asking our players to play hard, play physical, play with passion, it's probably inevitable. And eventually, I know fighting is going to be abolished from our game, and that's fine as well, as long as the passion and the physicality never leaves our game.
But the art of intimidation, Rick, will never leave the game.
No, it won't. I agree. And if you think you can intimidate somebody, you're gonna go after them. Mm-hmm. Again, no headshots, no cheap shots. I hate that stuff. I hate the hits from behind. That stuff really bothers me. But if you have a guy with his head down, open ice, and you can hit him, and you can think you can slow him up a little bit, you're going to do it. And again, that's part of the game. We don't want to take out. We don't want to take out the passion. We don't want to take out the physicality.
And I mean, and it's not just that time. It's the next time he comes down the ice and takes that first glance and sees the same guy in front of him. And maybe he isn't as aggressive, and maybe he backs off, and maybe he dumps the puck in as opposed to trying to carry it past you.
Exactly. And you get into these 7-game series, the more contact you make, the better off it helps you down that 6th, 7th game. You're going to wear them down. The playoffs, as you know, we're all playing every second night, and the key guys are playing 20, 22 minutes. And if you can keep hitting them and slowing them up a little bit, it improves your team's chances of winning the game and the series.
Well, you mentioned the playoffs, and we want to address that, and your season in Dallas as well. Rick Bowness is with us, the head coach of the Dallas Stars. We'll continue the conversation after these messages. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon on the program for this Monday with the head coach of the Dallas Stars, Rick Bowness. It was an unexpected year in many ways for you and your team, coming off a trip to the Stanley Cup final. I'm sure there was great optimism. I don't doubt that you had some of it. I don't think you believed, or anybody else believed, that the Stars were a fluke, 2 years ago. COVID hit you guys pretty hard and real early. As you look back, what happened this year?
Well, we had 3 different training camps. For starters, we had our training camp, and then we were all set to start the season, and all of a sudden we're stopped because of COVID. And so we take that break and we come back for another mini training camp, play a couple of games, and we were playing really well. And then we got hit with the weather storm down here, and we lost 9 days. And during that, we weren't allowed to skate because they closed all the arenas. They closed everything that was using power. We couldn't open up the rinks, turn the lights on. So those things all came into play. So we kind of fell behind a little bit then. And then we had key injuries. Our number one goalie didn't play 1 game. Our number one centerman played 2-3 games at the end of the season. We lost another offensive guy in Radulov, when he played 11 games. So the breaks didn't help us. They don't. Because when you come back, and when we came back after that second pause, because of the weather storms down here, they asked us to play 44 games in 77 days without a 2-day break. It's very disappointing for all of us to be out of the playoffs. But when you take an objective and honest look at it, we had a tough road ahead of us with the injuries and the schedule. Our guys, and I'm very proud of them. This team worked their butts off all year long. And I know there was 14 games that we lost either in a shootout or in overtime. And so we were in every game pretty well. So it is disappointing and as devastating it is to miss the playoffs. We feel what we went through this year is going to make us stronger and better for next year. But when you honestly take a look at that, you're asking a team to play 44 games in 77 days without a 2-day break. And what the 2-day break does, it gives you, you can give them a day off and you can reflect and everyone can gather their thoughts and get their energy back up, come back on the ice for a practice and get ready for the next opponent. We didn't have a practice for 6 or 7 weeks because we just couldn't do it. There was no time to practice, and rest was more important than practice time. So I think we had a couple of morning skates in there, but that was it. So we couldn't work on anything once we got into this, the last phase of our season. So I'm not making excuses. I'm just telling you the reality of what we dealt with. And so, again, I'm giving our players full credit. We lasted right up until the 55th game of the season before we were eliminated from the playoffs. And having our number one goalie in there for a couple of weeks, having our number one center for more than three games, that would have taken a lot of pressure off those 14 overtime losses that clearly cost us the playoffs. All you got to do is finish 7-7 in those and you're in the playoffs. So we know why we lost. We know what we faced. What we faced hopefully makes us stronger for next year. And it's still tough saying that we really miss missing the playoffs. It really hurts.
Rick, the one thing when you talk about no practices, how much contact could you have with your team even on game day? Because a lot of people don't understand the protocols and the rules that the Players Association and the league put in for you to have. What, how long were your meetings able to be? 3 minutes?
No, we were, as long as they were social distance and everyone had masks on. Yeah, okay. you had to shorten up your meetings, and you did. And the other part of that is what you people don't understand. We'd go on the road, even at American Airlines Center, we had to have three different dressing rooms. So we had our forwards over here. We had our defensemen in another room with the goalies. Then we had the taxi squad in another room. So the only time you could get them together was in those meetings. And again, they couldn't be long, or before the game in the locker room. These were all things you deal with. You find a way to deal with those. Those weren't the obstacles really that got in our way. The lack of quality practice time of any kind. So you can practice your power play. You can practice your 3-on-3. You can deal with those things. It was all video. Now, when we were in the bubble in Edmonton, what we got into the routine of doing was we would have our team meeting the night before and then have a morning skate, but always a day off between between skates, between games. We couldn't even do that this year because of all the protocol and everything. So the meetings were in the morning. They were quick to the point, and at night we did our specialty teams, but we dealt with it. That's the hand you're dealt with, you deal with as best you can, and we did. It was a totally different than anything we've ever been exposed to. Exactly. I've been around this league for 45 years. I've never experienced anything like I went through this year.
Yeah, but you can't tell me you like the bubble more than the season, though.
Well, I'll tell you what, the bubble, well, at least there was no travel. When this year, when we were traveling and you're leaving after games, and now in the bubble at the hotel, it was all NHL people, right? There was nobody else in there. But now you're going to different hotels and there's travelers there. You're getting on elevator or off elevator with strangers who you don't know. You hope they're wearing masks, but there's no guarantee they're wearing masks. You hope they're vaccinated. There's no guarantee they're vaccinated. So that was different. So the travel made things a lot different than the bubble. But neither one was perfect, I can tell you that.
With Rick Bowness, the head coach of the Dallas Stars, I mentioned to John, I wanted to talk about, because of your experience, because you've been through this as a player and now as a coach for such a long time, you have this successful season. I think you would concede a little surprising last year. Not overwhelmingly shocking, but a little surprising that you got to the Stanley Cup final. And I wondered about the notion of having a target on your back the following year, whether you feel like teams are more motivated to play against you because of the success that your team had. You went through it a bit as a player. Did you experience any of that, or is that fantasy?
I don't think it's fantasy. And then we talked to our team about that. You're playing opponents now that look at us. You're the Dallas Stars that went to the Stanley Cup Finals. You're not the Dallas Stars that missed the playoffs or Dallas Stars that did that. You're the Stanley Cup Finalists that won the Western Conference. So people certainly would get it, be ready for you. There's no question. That's not fallacy at all. It's reality. And, you know, we talked to them early in all three training camps. Listen, these guys are going to be ready for us. We have to be ready because the intensity level goes up when you're playing. It's the same as Tampa Bay faced. You're coming in. We're playing the Stanley Cup champions tonight. That gets your attention. you're playing the Stanley Cup finalists, the Western Conference champ. That gets the opposition's attention. There's no doubt.
What was it like to just play seven opponents?
Different. Actually, the back-to-back was fine. We had a couple of series where, well, we played Detroit four straight games. We played Florida three straight games. So that was different. So it actually made the meetings a little bit easier because all you had to deal with was that game. Okay, this is what you expect from them. This is what we have to do better to play that same opponent, as opposed to breaking down. Then you go into Columbus or you go into Chicago and you got a whole new set of meetings and everything else that involved goes around with that. But when you're playing those two game series, the second game was easy. But then again, when you're playing every second day, so you're playing in Columbus one night, you got to jump on a plane, you got a day, and you're playing in Chicago the next night. That was more like a normal season. But again, these obstacles that you think are in your way, you just deal with them, and you make sure as a coach that the players don't perceive them as obstacles. This is what we're dealing with, and this is how we're going to deal with it. We move on.
Makes you wonder what it was like with a six-team NHL, doesn't it? When
they played
exactly
14,
right. But they didn't have video.
Yeah,
that's true.
Well, they would play 14 games against each other, and sometimes a home and home on a Saturday Sunday, and they'd be on the same train going back from Toronto to Chicago or Toronto to Detroit. So, let me ask you this though, Rick: would you, if the schedule maker came to you and said, we're thinking of doing these back-to-backs again, would you be in favor of playing a Tuesday, Thursday against the same team?
Yeah, I'd have no problem with that. No,
having no problem with it is different than liking it.
No, but if you go into Detroit, let's say you go into Detroit, you're not playing and traveling. You're staying for 3 days. That makes it easier. I'm looking at that from the wear and tear on the players. It's easier on the players if you do that. You're not playing in four different cities and six different nights with all the travel that comes with that. So the travel-wise, it was a little easier.
Nobody understands really that maybe Dallas has, in a regular NHL season, Dallas might have the worst travel schedule of anyone. Because there's nobody close.
Nashville's an hour and a half flight. Everyone else is well over 2 hours.
Yeah.
In the course of a playoff series, again, one of the other things that's talked about a lot is that familiarity breeds contempt. And as a series progresses, things tend to get nastier and nastier. You almost had that kind of scenario over and over again this year. Did you see any of that? Was there additional animosity between teams, especially when you were playing, because it could have happened, I don't know whether it happened with you, three games in a row against the same team?
No, not to the extent that everyone would think it was. No, I didn't see that. We played them eight times. It's not a playoff series. Now, the playoff
series.
That's
the difference. Yeah.
That's the difference right there. Sure. So a playoff series is going to breed that contempt because you're playing for so much. But when you're playing them, you're in the fifth or sixth game. Okay, we got two more games with these guys. Regardless, I didn't see a whole lot of that.
When you look ahead. Sorry,
go ahead, Rob. No, you go.
When you look ahead, and I don't expect you to be specific here, but your team goes to Stanley Cup final, then misses the playoffs. Under normal circumstances, the team would be looking at least tweaking. And you're always going to make changes year to year. But do you essentially, Rick, write off this year as an anomaly and almost disregard the ultimate outcome?
You miss the playoffs, it stays in the stage with you. So you can't, we'll never write it off. But in terms of tweaks, if we get healthy, we've improved our team a significant amount. Putting Ben Bishop in our net, our number one goalie, makes a huge difference in our team. Putting Tyler Seguin back at the number one top line for 82 games next year, that makes us immediately better. Radulov, Rupe Hintz, who was our best forward this year, played So played all year with a lower body injury and couldn't play a lot of games because of that. So we don't have to make a lot of tweaks. We really just have to get healthy. And people hate hearing that because they, as soon as you say that, oh, they're making excuses. It's not, it's reality, right? It is just, we don't have to go make a lot of tweaks. And that's certainly up to Jimmy Neal and management. They do a great job with that. I don't get involved with that. But I know we're going to be a whole lot better team next year, having Ben Bishop in our net, having a healthy Seguin, having a healthy Radulov, and having a healthy Roope Hintz. We're going to be better. So, and it will be a bit better because of the improvement of a Jason Robertson, how Robo played so well, and the improvement of a Jake Ottinger, who should have been in the American Hockey League all year, but ended up playing a significant amount of games for us in the net simply because of the injury to the Ben Bishop. So those areas alone will make us a better team.
Tell you what, Jason Robertson, was his play a surprise to you this season?
Absolutely. Because we, where he was in January at our first training camp to where he was at the end of the year, you wouldn't think it was the same player. We were healthy scratching him early in the season because of his play. Right. Jason had to learn quickly. When you're a skilled player and, you know, you're getting bumped around and you've got to fight for, you've got to learn how to fight for pucks. You've got to learn how to protect the puck better because now you're playing against men with the intensity that the National Hockey League players come at you with. He had to learn that. He was getting knocked off of pucks. He wasn't going into the corner for battles. And he had to learn all of that. So once he learned the intensity of our league and how to and just how good a league this is, he took his intensity up to a whole other level. And at the end of the year, he was in the corners battling. And he was going to the net harder. And he was hanging onto the puck, making plays. So the improvements, and again, when you're not watching these other three divisions, it's hard to say this. But from our division, by far, Jason Robertson is the most improved player in this division by far. Can't compare it to the rest of the league because I didn't see them. But his strides from January, when we weren't even sure he was going to make our team, is he going to play? Are we putting him on the taxi squad? That's where he was. And at the end of the year, he's our dominant left winger, one of our best players. So that's how far that kid came along.
It also speaks to the style of hockey that has changed because he wasn't the biggest guy, but he was able to use his body to affect at times.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Every young player comes into our league, they got to figure out just how intense this league is and how good this league is. And it's every team. There's no weak teams and there's no weak player. You're playing in the National Hockey League, you're a good player. And he had to learn that, but he learned it. One thing about Jason, man, he loves the game. He was on the ice yesterday morning because they're going, he and Jake are going to the Team USA in the World Championship. But you say he's a hockey player. He loves the game. He would go on the ice every day if you let him. And we had to keep him off the ice sometimes just so he could have something left for the games. But he loves everything about being a hockey player. And he just loves playing the game. He is going to keep getting better because of his passion and his love of the game. Regardless of his skill level, his drive is going to keep him making him a better player.
Before we let you go, asking you the next question after a normal season, under normal circumstances, might be deemed slightly unfair. It is extremely unfair this year. Because by your own acknowledgement, by everybody's observation, you haven't played everybody. You haven't seen everybody. You haven't scouted, I would imagine, everybody. Looked ahead even at film of teams you're not going to play. But is there a team that jumps out at you that you're looking at as maybe the favorite in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Colorado. And I said this last year going into the bubble. What's the team that worries you the most? Colorado. They have elite skill. They have elite speed. They have depth. And I love the way they play. And you've got a guy like Nate MacKinnon driving the bus. And when he's not there, you've got a lot of other great players carrying the ball. So Colorado would be the team. Grubauer, if he can hold up, I really like the way that team. That team scared me last year in the bubble. And they had some injuries. We had some injuries. They lost some goalies. And that probably helped us. But that's a team that I was worried about last year. And I have watched them play this year because of the different schedules we've had. The night between games, you get to watch. Yep. And I always enjoy watching Colorado. Nate's a friend of mine. I love watching him play the game. So I would go with Colorado at this point.
All you Nova Scotians stay together. Okay, you got 10 seconds. Who's coming out of your division? Carolina, Florida, man. Nashville, or Tampa? 10 seconds.
That's a tough one. I love the way Carolina plays. Love the way Florida plays. Tampa Bay's the Stanley Cup defending Canada Cup champions. Flip a coin. But I love the way I really love the way Florida played this year. They came on huge. Love the way Roddy's got his team playing in Carolina. Tampa Bay has Vasilevsky, so take your pick.
Well, and as we often,
I'm not going that way.
say, at the end of the day, it probably comes down to goaltending, and not necessarily who the best goaltender of the year was, but who's the best goaltender over the next, 18 to 24 games, right?
Exactly right. You don't go anywhere in our league with average goaltending. Average goaltending, you're out. Simple as that.
Rick, it was very gracious of you to take time for us. We wish you continued good health. I know the weather will be good there, and I'm sure you're going to be anxious for the start of next season. And let's all hope that next season looks more like 2 years ago than it did like this year, huh?
Can't wait to get back to what is viewed as a normal season.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A normal life would be awesome.
Hey, I want to make sure I see you at the Danny Gallivan tournament first week in July. You better be there.
They moved it. I'll be there. We're going to get back to Nova Scotia at some point. As soon as they let us back into the country, we're going back to Nova Scotia. I can't wait to get back there.
We wish you good health, and thank you very much for your time today. It's greatly appreciated. All the best.
My pleasure. Really enjoyed it. You guys take care of yourself. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
You too. Rick Bonus, the head coach of the Dallas Stars. We'll come back to wrap it after these messages. McCown and Shannon, our thanks to Rick Bonus of the Dallas Stars for joining us. I mentioned it off the top of the program, and I confess, John, that I did not know this. You had to tell me this.
Yeah.
That as he approaches 2,500 games behind the bench, coaching in the National Hockey League, as an assistant and as a head coach, that is more than anybody in the history of the game.
Yeah.
That is really an astounding fact. And I'm going to guess, wouldn't you say most hockey fans have no idea?
I think there's probably a great many that don't. What I would say is that when he surpassed Scotty's, I think it was Scotty's number, he was in Tampa, and the Lightning did a really nice job for him to give him that number. But I think you got a real sense of it through the 40 minutes we spent with Rick, of his love and passion for the game. And I mean, all you need to do with him is volley out a topic, and he will expand on it because he just loves talking about the game of hockey. He still loves teaching about the game of hockey. And Rick is one of those people who I have crossed paths with for years and years and years in seven cities. Not that I've been in them, he's been in them. And he continues to be one of those people that he's good to have in your organization. The fact that after Jim Montgomery got let go as the coach of the Dallas Stars and they put Rick in as the interim, that now that they have endorsed him as the full-time head coach, it really speaks volumes of what this guy is. He's a quality hockey person and has changed with the times. That was the other thing. When you, in our discussion, how things were different in the 80s and 90s. And he's been an assistant coach and a head coach all through that time. And I just think he's a remarkable person. And one of the reasons, it's a cliche, but you're in this game and around this game because of the people. And he's the perfect example of what those type of people are.
Well, one of the most intriguing responses I got from him, and I'm not questioning it in any way, shape, or form, it was the notion that maybe there's less coaching today. Individual coaching. And he made the valid point. I mean, another person could have just said, no, that's not true, and not expounded upon it. But he made a valid point. He said, in his day, almost nobody went straight from the draft into the National Hockey League. You went and played in the minor leagues for at least a year, many times, many years. There are many players didn't make it to the National Hockey League until they were well into their 20s. And he said, that's where they got their teaching. That's where they got their coaching. And by the time they got to the NHL, no, you probably didn't have to coach them much. But there's a bunch of right now, it's abnormal for an 18 or 19 year old who's drafted who doesn't go right to the NHL, isn't it?
Well, certainly, certainly the first round picks, there's a lot of, and there's, I tell you what, there's a lot of pressure that that first round pick, you know, that top 10 pick of a team can be a difference maker to a team and play and get the team over the hump. And when you look at guys like William Nylander, first round pick, top 10, Nick Ehlers, first round pick, top 10, none of these guys spend any time in the minors.
No.
And where do they learn systems? And again, as he talked about with Jason Robertson, how do you learn that this is going to be intense and these are men you're playing with every night? That's the part that fascinates me.
Well, it was insightful and enjoyable, and I hope the audience liked it as well. Rick Bowness, the head coach of the Dallas Stars. More to come tomorrow. We hope you'll come back and rejoin us for another episode of this journey into oblivion. McCowan, Shannon.
Into the ether.
We'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.